This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear, at length, from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry, with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind landmark projects. You can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. The digital at-home media industry has been growing rapidly, and as awareness is built, there's been more and more of a push from brands and media buyers to provide better, deeper detail on the actual audience. The old way of selling audience for outdoor was gross traffic counts and extrapolations on what they meant. The new way is big data, and a Sacramento company called City Labs is working with the out-of-home industry's main guys on audience measurement, Geopath, to provide what they call a complete knowledge of how Americans move around their country. When you have a deep understanding of patterns, volumes, and demographics, you can fine-tune advertising and make it more effective and attractive. In this episode, I talked to City Labs CEO Michael Clark about what the company does, how it does it, and what that means not only for digital out-of-home advertising, but for interesting stuff like data visualization. So first things first, tell me a little bit about your company, what you guys do, and then we can go a little deeper from there.
Sure. So City Labs has been around since 2001. We are a mobility analytics firm, meaning that we are transportation experts, that our core business has been for many years building out software for government agencies to use to predict traffic flows. And then a few years ago, we expanded out into how can we use our own tools to kind of understand the movement of mobility at a large scale and kind of give that data out to people and other applications.
So it would be, who would use it? Who was using your product in the past?
So we kind of, maybe I wasn't real clear on what we do. We kind of have two sections. So we kind of have our software section, which is used by traditionally by governments and engineering firms who use those products to, you know, do what if scenarios. What if we build a new bridge? What if we build a new light rail line? These type of things, right? And so that was government entities and the consulting firms, engineering firms that do work for them. And then this other side, which is a kind of a solution platform data business, which is what we have now with Streetlytics.
Okay. And Streetlytics is a platform that's maybe, well, you explain it, you'll do it better than me.
Okay. Well, Streetlytics, basically, this happened. It's a little bit of a funny story. I was based out of our office in Florida, and I was looking out at the street out my window, and I said, you know, with our tools and with this emerging, I don't really like the term big data, but the emerging big data that's out there with from GPS tracks of smart devices moving around, that we could calculate, you know, pretty well how many people are and how many vehicles are going down every street. And initially, we're doing this in the U.S. And I kind of laid out a method and talked about this with some people and said, does anyone care? I'm a technical guy. So to me, it was kind of, okay, with this type of data and with our technology, we can do this. But is there a market for that? And I talked to a couple smart people who said, yes, there's a big market for that. And one of those has been a very strong open embrace, I would say, in the advertising field, certainly in out of home.
And what's the interest to them? Why would they care?
It's basically, we are able to say, you know, it's audience. It basically is powering a new audience metric system in the U.S. With Geopath, which is the association of that works with the, you know, the different entities that work in the out of home industry.
Yeah.
So we are able to provide now, you know, information on the audience at the location, not down the street, but right in front of that panel, do that on an hourly basis and make that and put out updates to that on a monthly basis. So we can basically say this many people saw that panel in March, and we can tell you that in April. In addition to how many people saw it, we can tell you where those people live. And therefore, you can attach, you know, the demographics and information you have about those neighborhoods. So basically, that gets funneled through the system. And so at the point of the panel, you can understand how many people see it and who are those people. Tell me about those people that see this. We also pull in information about the people going by that panel. Why are they traveling? Not in great detail at this point, but are they commuting to work, home from work? Are they going to university or not? That type of level, or some kind of, you know, other purpose. We don't have it cut up too finely at this point. It's more or less going to and from work and other purposes. So I think that's quite a bit of data that was never available before,
right,
in the out-of-home industry.
So previously, all they had were kind of gross estimates of traffic flow on a particular highway or whatever, and it might have been something from a year earlier.
Correct. That's correct.
So the question begs, based on everything that you just described, where does that data come from?
So we as a company in our process is kind of data agnostic. We can pull in data from any source. What we need to know is we need to have data, you know, kind of GPS tracks of movement. They can come from apps that are being used on smartphones. They could come from the cell providers themselves. They could come from manufacturers of automobiles that have GPS probes located within the vehicles. And we can kind of consume that and use it in our process to inform the process. That kind of data helps us to understand, let's say, the routes that people use to, you know, where people go, at what time of day, and what routes they use to go between those two points. So we use that part of that from GPS data. We collect all the traffic counts that are out there from all the DOTs. And so that data helps us to understand the total movements that are happening along the roads. So basically, the GPS data is kind of the pattern type information, and the quantity is coming from traffic counts and also from kind of our historic background, which are these traffic models, which are basically models which take in, you know, how many people live in this neighborhood, how many people work in this area, therefore how many trips should be happening in these areas. So it's kind of a combination of three things: kind of spatial information that's coming from GPS, traffic counts, which we kind of consider as close as we can get to ground truth, or, you know, actually measured traffic counts. And then the third item is kind of filling in gaps with kind of modeling tools, which are, you know, we have been building these for over 30 or 40 years in the history of, I would say transportation modelers have been doing that type of thing for 30 or 40 years. And so that kind of fills in the gaps where we don't have a lot of spatial data between certain points, or we don't have many traffic counts in that area. Well, we have to do something. And so we estimate those and fill in those gaps based upon these kind of models that are used.
And where do you get the demographic stuff that's, you know, making estimates what these people are commuting, these people are shopping, and so on?
That data in our application in the U.S. is coming from ESRI, Esri, who provides us with current quarter estimates of households living in each area and employment data.
And again, you use your algorithms and so on to extrapolate that into something that makes sense?
Yeah, that's, you know, again, that data is, you know, if we take the example of, let's say you have a suburban community, and we'll simplify this, that there's one main road coming in and out of that suburban community. Well, if we looked at how many people live in that community, which we get from ESRI, we can kind of, and we can apply algorithms which say there should be about, let's say, 10,000 trips coming out of that area each day, based upon how many people live there and the characteristics of those people. Mm-hmm. We'll also have a traffic count. Maybe the traffic count says 12,000. And then we'll have the spatial data from the GPS tracks, which tells us, okay, those people in that neighborhood, this is where they go, and these are the routes that they use to get to those places. And so it's kind of an optimization algorithm which combines that information in a smart way to say, okay, this is how many trips are coming out of that area. This is where they are going. This is what routes they're using.
Right. So you're working with Geopath, the old Traffic Audit Measurement Bureau, to come up with an enhanced audience location measurement system of some kind. How will the out-of-home ad industry use this system? Do they buy it, or is it just made available to them? Or,
you know, that's kind of, you know, Geopath would know more of that than I. My understanding of it is that as a member of Geopath, you get access to this data.
Okay.
So my understanding is they will provide that access through a web application, through a web page. Mm-hmm. And we have built some tools that power that web page. For example, one of the tools that we have built is, you know, let's say you have a panel, and basically in their interface, you'll be able to click at that location, and it will tell you the traffic hour by hour and the different types of days, on a Saturday, on a Sunday, on a weekday, that type of thing, right? But what if you have you have an advertisement, or you own multiple panels? How can we understand the unique audience that sees one or two or three or four of those panels? And we built a kind of what's called a web service that goes over to our data and pulls that type of information out. So you can say, not only what is the audience for this panel, but tell me about the audience for these five panels, or these 10 panels, or these three panels.
So this, I know you're not an advertising guy, but the idea here from the lens of the ad people is this gives them a lot more accountability than they've ever had.
I think from where I sit as a transportation guy, and as much as I know about outdoor advertising, that this certainly, you know, gets very close to the type of information that is available to people that do advertising online. Mm-hmm. You know, we're bringing in the demographics, which has never been possible before. And so you can say, these are the people, and these are the characteristics of those people that are going by that panel. And this is those characteristics, and how many hour by hour by hour. So it can certainly help the emergence or the expansion of digital panels. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to me a much more richer set of data to explain when you're selling your panel to a Mercedes or a Coca-Cola or something like this. Who are these people? That are they your customers?
Right.
And they've never had that before. I guess they've done it in some kind of, this is, you know, the population that lives around that area or something like that. But we're basically saying this is the moving population that's going by that panel.
Right. And that can also, I would imagine, assist companies like retailers, and particularly quick service restaurants and so on, if they have a really good understanding of traffic flow in neighborhoods, or I guess with banking as well, anybody who is serving a mobile audience.
Absolutely. I mean, it's another area that we are having success in with this is in the retail sector and in commercial real estate. I give an example of if I were a large donut chain, and as how people figure out locations for their outlets, they typically do this based upon these kind of concentric circles of who lives around that area. Mm-hmm. And what this is saying is, we can pull out, for example, if you wanted to put in a donut shop in the Toronto area, once we build out Canada, I could pull out of that data the road segment where there is the maximum number of people that are commuting to work in the morning of your customer type that do not presently travel within whatever you want to say, 500 meters of a donut shop on their way to work. Mm-hmm. So it's really based upon the, you know, it's kind of the flow of consumers going through a region. And we can kind of tap those rivers and say, that's where the, that would be an ideal spot if you were a retailer, or you were, you know, had a advertising panel. If you're trying to reach your customers, this would be a great location to put that, based upon the flow of those demographics coming down the roads.
Right. It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
So if I'm not a, if I'm a media company, but I'm not a member of Geopath, or I don't subscribe to it, or however that works, the data that you guys generate, is it otherwise available to, or if I am, let's say Tim Hortons up in Canada, when you build that out, can I buy it? Do I subscribe to it? How does it all work?
Yeah, we provide it, and we provide access to it in three ways. One of those is we have our own web application. So you could subscribe to that web application, and basically you have a map and you can click around all you want and get out, you know, information on different road segments. So if you're going to be doing kind of point by point by point, that's a good solution. A second one is through an API. So if you have your own system, which you want to merge our data in with your data and provide that to your, you know, internal customers or external customers, you could basically put our data and plug it into your system through that API. Mm-hmm. And then the third way is if you're going to be doing kind of bulk analysis type stuff and really, you know, true analytics, then you can acquire the data on premise from us. We've been doing that with some insurance companies who are kind of working at a national scale, and they want to understand movement of their customers.
Right. So they're getting something like an enterprise license from you.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. There are other types of technologies out there that are doing things like analyzing traffic and car volumes and things like that. I'm thinking of a couple of companies that do video analytics and are using pattern detection, where they're tracking vehicles and down to you know, recognizing license plates, that sort of thing. Is that competing technology, or is it complementary?
It's kind of complementary. I mean, that's the type of data that we can pull in, all that type of data into our process to kind of expand it out, right? And so I kind of look at them that if you wanted to do a bespoke study of a certain area, that's a good solution. If you want to know things at a little bit larger scale, then our solution is better. So I don't really see them as competitors. And then that type of data we can pull in as more information to kind of inform our process.
Right. The whole Internet of Things, the rise of that, and the number of sensors that are coming on stream in different ways. Do you see those sensors as also starting to contribute to what you're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why what we have built here is a, you know, fairly generalizable solution that it doesn't rely upon a specific, let's say, brand or type of data. It can use anything that we can get our hands on. Mm-hmm. And kind of try to build these algorithms so we pull out the best parts. The, you know, some of the issues you get with like GPS data is that's a sample, right? It could be, you know, let's say users of a weather app or subscribers to a certain phone company. And so you kind of have a, there is an inherent bias with that. And we don't No one really fully understands that. But to us, it's kind of, okay, what we want out of that is that's a sample of people and where they go and what routes they go on and what time of day do they travel. And we kind of mash that up with, you know, other data sources. And we kind of, in our process, we kind of have what we call quality weights that we apply to each of these observations. So we kind of say, okay, how rich is that data set? What is the sample size? And the process kind of sits there and says, okay, I trust that observation more than this, but this one is conflicting a little bit. How do I, you know, kind of pull this together in the best way? It's even like traffic counts. Traffic counts themselves come in a wide variety of shapes and sizes. They can be, you know, things that come from permanently embedded detectors and sensors in the roadways. Mm-hmm. And those can be well maintained or not well maintained. And then you have classically also the rubber hose that has been put down the road for three. Somebody takes that number and then somebody factors that. They're pretty simple factors to say this is what it is on an average annual basis based upon this 3-day measurement or a week or maybe 2 weeks. And so we look at those different sources and how that data was collected and kind of put up a quality weight, kind of a tolerance on each of those observations. So that kind of gives our process kind of a, you know, you might have two or three or four pieces of data kind of conflicting with each other, but having this kind of tolerance range around each other, it helps the algorithms kind of say, okay, this is the convergence of what I can get out of that. That's what I think fits the best with those.
Right. As a consumer, and definitely not I'm far removed from being a data scientist, my familiarity with things like traffic patterns and volumes and so on goes to something simplistic like Google Maps and, you know, turning on the traffic layer on the maps. That purports to be real time. What are they doing to get all that? And does it have any degree of accuracy?
You're asking me to comment on Google. they do things pretty well. What I know about that is that what you're getting out of that are speeds, right? The speed of traffic. You see those red lines, green lines, yellow lines on the map. And it is calculating your travel time, your current travel time to your destination. If you ever look at that, when you leave, it may say you will arrive at 5 p.m., but when you get there, it may actually be 5:07 or it might be 4:56. It's not, you know, we accept that as a reasonable amount of error. It's right. It's better than what we have. The way they get those speeds is essentially, if there is one vehicle that has just gone down a road segment at, you know, a certain speed, then it says, well, that's the current speed. Now, hopefully there are multiple vehicles going down that roadway that they get a blended speed. So it's kind of dependent on how many people have Google Maps open at the time, right? Or Waze or whatever.
Okay.
But in general, they're as a user, I use it too. They're fairly accurate, but I also see on my daily commute how it is red, but when I get there, it's actually not red. It's better than red. And once I go through there at a green speed, I'm sure if you look 5 minutes later, that road is now showing you as green.
Right.
Because I was the probe that went down that roadway.
So they're using pre-approved, okayed personal data, so to speak, to get that. Is anything of what you guys do sort of subject to privacy concerns?
Absolutely. We treat things at the NATO, well, in the U.S., something called a block group, a census block group. So you can kind of, it's a group of blocks, right, of city blocks. Mm-hmm. So we kind of only look at the origins and where people live at that scale. We don't get near, you know, what individual house
they're living in.
So we kind of have this spatial filter in a way that kind of fuzzes out where people actually live and work at that scale. And there's a device number associated with that, but there's no address associated with that device or any characteristics of the person that owns that device. It is just a number to us.
Right. One of the reasons I was intrigued by what you're up to is I'm a big advocate for visualized data. Now, I realize you guys don't visualize data or provide that sort of thing, but certainly it would seem that the data that you're generating, even if it's just hourly and not real time, would be something that for everything from a control room to a transport company that wants to show, you know, how busy we are, how, you know, where our buses are, where our trains are, whatever they may be, that they could visualize that on very large display canvases using your data. Is that something that's being done or contemplated?
Yeah, I mean, we have our own web application, which does, you know, visualize the volumes, and, you know, we put out maps of things. We actually have something coming out here in roughly another week, which will be kind of the first U.S. national traffic map, which will be an interactive kind of experience that you could say, okay, at 9 a.m. Eastern, looking kind of from space, this is the intensity of traffic throughout the U.S. And then 10 a.m., 11 a.m., 12 a.m. So you can kind of see the West Coast wake up and how this kind of evolves. So we do some visualization work on this type of thing. Geopath is building, you know, a web application which has, you know, visualization tools associated with that. In governments, which we have worked in for a long time, you talked about traffic centers and that type of thing. This would certainly be a good, you know, kind of feed that they could, you know, kind of have in the background of this is what, you know, kind of happens on Saturdays and Sundays and, you know, month by month by month on every roadway. Mm-hmm. We are certainly at some point, right now we're pretty focused on advertising and insurance, but at some point this will certainly be a good tool for use in kind of smart cities applications and that type of area. Mm-hmm.
It would strike me that that kind of data, you know, the snapshot of the country down to the state and the city level for a UPS or a FedEx or something like that, or even Uber or Lyft, to kind of show what traffic conditions are against where their vehicles are would be fascinating.
I think from, you know, we kind of have this whole change going on, and the term used is mobility, right? Moving people from point to point. And I was at a symposium recently put on by Ford, which one would think of as being basically focused on selling cars. They are pretty much focused now on how is our business changing to respond to this change in the mobility model of how people move around. Mm-hmm. Kind of what is driven by Uber and Lyft, these type of services. And there were several presentations in there about, okay, we have these self-driving cars that are going to happen, self-driving vehicles, I should say. And we're going to have all the vehicles will be connected to the internet. And all this kind of gives an opportunity, let's say, to kind of how can we make mobility for individuals and mobility collectively and the impacts of cars moving around and type of things in terms of safety, in terms of pollution, in terms of congestion, how can we make that better? And in several of those presentations, they talked about different kinds of services, like services that would be focused on taking people to rail lines. And then they take the rail line to go into the city, and then there's another waiting service on the other side to take them to their office. But in several of those presentations, they asked, yes, but we don't really know how many people do that. So I'm sitting there in the back of the audience waving my hand, right? Because we do know that. And they have not, you know, there has never been a good understanding at scale of the movement of people. Mm-hmm. And if you were in the business of saying, okay, I'm going to serve people with, let's say, a self-driving car service, give me an understanding of the market. And without knowing how many people move from point to point, neighborhood to neighborhood, hour by hour, you're kind of guessing at that. Mm-hmm. So I think our data certainly fits into that in terms of a market knowledge and understanding. I think it fits in terms of I actually walk to work, even though I built something that's around driving. I walk to work. And I look at everything. I look at the, you know, the parking rates, you know, that's on the meters. I look at where signs are placed. I look at how the traffic signals are timed. I look at all this hardware, how many lanes go this way and that way, whether they're one-way streets or not. I look at all that and I kind of say, all that was kind of decided. It's kind of grown organically, kind of stamping out problems, you know, bit by bit by bit, because there was never this kind of comprehensive understanding of where do people go from and to and when. And I hope we can be a part of that to kind of make cities and regions kind of better.
Interesting. It's a good way to end it.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.